This is Marketing Jam, a show featuring the brightest minds in marketing.
Brought to you by Canada Post. Head to canadapost.ca/insightpodcast for ideas to add value to your marketing.
As we get going into our show, I want to talk about SEO quickly. This whole search engine optimization thing. People are frustrated by it, confused by it, and probably not really getting the straight goods about how it works. Back when we outsource our SEO, we're often confused when we get the reports back. It seemed like a dark art. They were rubbing some sort of oil on our websites and supposedly magic was happening. When we started using Ahrefs, it was a game changer. The reports we got, the clarity on site ranking for terms, and really, the transparency and understanding between off-site and on-site SEO was really helpful. Today, for all of our clients, we provide Ahrefs reporting and use the tool to audit sites. It's the premier SEO tool, and you can have the confidence you're getting the top quality tool that provides incredible support and resources to help you with your SEO for your brand or the clients you work with. Check out ahrefs.com today.
Thanks everyone for joining us on another week of Marketing Jam. I am so thrilled for our guest today. I actually am a fan of his podcast, been following him for a while. He's a legend in the marketing world. So without further ado, Tony Chapman, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So Tony, I know you know, the whole show could be about your journey to where you are now, but do you want to kind of give the highlights of kind of your road and in the marketing world and what you've seen and some of these kind of stories are incredible. I know people can read your bio, but maybe some of the highlights for you that got you where you are today.
Well, not to worry, but I'm going to take you back to age five,
yes,
believe it or not. And I had an incredible mother. One day I decided I wanted to shake the neighbors down by setting up that lemonade stand. And she made me learn about how much the lemons cost. I had to rent the pitcher. I couldn't put it in front of my lawn because it's not where the sun was. I had to go to the park. She taught about sampling. At the end of the day, I have no idea if I came back with any more quarters than I would have just doing what I originally intended to do. But I just felt it was my money and I'd earned it. And I felt excited about it. And I think that kind of attitude took me into university. I was doing a finance marketing co-major because I love balance sheets. I love numbers. But I started selling radio advertising for a small radio station in the West Island. And it wasn't so much the money I was making, which was incredible because it was a commission only and I got to be quite good at it. It was the magic I felt when I put consumers together with sellers, like when I, you know, a little rib shop where I walk in one night and it's opening night and people start coming in. I ask them where they hear about it. It was a radio station. I just really felt early on, I found a higher purpose that if I could continue to put great content out there that would created an itch and it was authentic and it was exciting. And in doing it, created commerce. I couldn't think of a better place to make a living. And that's kind of really the notes of entrepreneur lemonade stand. Content, bringing people together, kind of led me into the world of advertising.
Wow. And tell me about the agencies you've been a part of, because I bought and sold three different agencies legend, you're in the Hall of Fame.
My first agency was really focused on internal audience. I produced things like sales conferences, and I got to realize how important it was for leaders to animate their vision, for cultures to become together. And that's what we did for a living. In fact, I invented a product where I took these slideshows, beautiful pieces, Christopher Plummer would narrate it. The soundtrack would say our product. I'd bring up that Pepsi logo and our people and Pepsi people. And the next week I could very quickly turn it around into a General Motors show or in those days, a Nabisco show or a Procter & Gamble. It allowed me to recycle my creative platforms. And it was a lot of fun. Did it for about 10 years, sold it to a British firm for a ton of money. And I can say that because most of that money I never saw because they went bankrupt. They got caught up in the 1992 recession. Mm. Then I decided to go consumer facing because I wanted to do something different. And that's when I started Capital C and we had an incredible 22 year run, won agency of the year, 100 gold investor show awards, clients like Pepsi for an entire lifetime relationship over two agencies. And about 8 years ago, I sold all of that. I just felt I'd done it all. And I went on the road and to speak my mind in the media and at conferences in China and Brazil and Spain and all across North America, Scotland, Poland. And that's kind of what I was doing until I got bit by this podcast bug.
That is incredible. So tell me about, you know, Marketing Hall of Fame. Tell me about that, what that was like to be a part of and being inducted into that world.
I still think I got the Joe Clark vote, where there's a lot of people were voting for A or B, and I happened to be in the middle of it all. And it was a split vote, because I have no idea the people that are in that. I went in the year I went in, Izzy Sharp, you know, the founder of Four Seasons, the founder of Shoppers Drug Mart, Bill Dern, who was an absolute legend, Peter Elwood, some big, big names. I think maybe what I did do, though, is capture the imagination of the voters that, the time everybody was above the line, and that's where all the prestige was creating these big TV commercials. And I was kind of in the weeds trying to sell cases in grocery stores. And we were the first into shopper marketing and the consumer customer journey. And I think that some of the people that were voting that day realized that the future was really very quickly moving to the power the trade has, the retailers had to dictate thumbs up or thumbs down on a brand. And they needed really good creative support. And that's kind of what we did.
That's amazing. So the time we're living in now, you're speaking a lot, you MC a lot. What's it been like kind of seeing events kind of slow down, kind of in-person events and big conferences not happening right now?
Yeah, well, first of all, for me, which was the advantage, is I started looking at the speaking business and going, I'm an aging white guy. And, you know, the audience deserves that incredible new crop of speakers coming up with their diversity, their new thoughts and technology and stuff, things that I couldn't really bring with true relevance and value. So I reinvented myself as a conference host versus an MC. And the difference being is that I'm a journalist on stage. I'm the third party. I get to ask you the questions you want to answer. Nice. I get to ask questions the audience wants to answer. But I weave a thread through the entire event. So at the end, we started at the beginning of the conference on a quest. Throughout the day, we measure our progress, but at the end, people go home and say, this is what I've got in my knapsack. So by doing that, it wasn't so much about age or gender. It really was, do you have the ability to listen generously, curious enough to care about the sector I'm in and ask the questions and bring it all together? So the world's changed. You know, the concept of conferences and events are now happening like we're doing on Zoom. But I found that my role as a journalist is the ability to keep audiences engaged, I'm doing a conference next week to 2,000 people, and they've all signed up for it. But now with the distractions of being home and the dog and the kids and the snacks and everything else that happens at home, my job is even more exciting because I've got to find a way to be that narrator, the people that stitch the thread together to the Yoda at the conference to really keep it moving. So I'm enjoying it. I'm finding the challenge is you got to get excited about the light on your computer versus the energy of 2,000 people on the stage. But, you know, reinvention is really the essence of life, and never fear the fact that things are changing and you got to climb, you got to jump to a new platform. It's the people that stand on the existing platform and watch it burn are the ones that are missing out on the opportunity of a changing world.
Wow. I feel like you play this role of, you've seen Lord of the Rings, you're going down to the mines of Moria and finding the gems and the things in people that maybe they haven't pulled out before.
I am absolutely going to steal that because that's a great metaphor and analogy. It's finding those nuggets and polishing them, but also putting it, I always said, my mantra since day one is head, heart, and hands. Anytime you can make your ideas, your podcast, your marketing jam, head, easy to understand, heart, I'm excited about it, and hands, I'm taking that away and I'm going to work with it. As you just did, you gave me a gem that I can use because polishing those nuggets, presenting them in a way that people can relate to them. You know, speakers, a lot of speakers you hire are incredible at their talk. They talk about, you know, trust. They talk about success, excellence. But unless you can find a way to take that and say, oh, how does that impact that audience? What does trust mean to that person in row three? What does trust mean to the person that just joined the culture, somebody that's 50 that might be worried about losing their job? What does trust mean to them? And if you can make that, draw those parallels and draw that bridge, that's a good day's work.
So tell me about trends that you're seeing. You've been in agency world, like, you know, early Mad Men type days, right? Where, you know, it was, you know, big picture and big ideas, but you've always been a pragmatist, it sounds like, and you've always been saying, okay, how does it mix with, you know, numbers and monetization? What are you seeing with the trends now with kind of shoppers having the power and what you said about giving people the control to be able to, you know, decide what happens in a store or not, in a grocery chain?
Massive change, and the people that respond to it are going to have an incredible creative journey. The first thing is stop trying to be the hero in your story. And I think a lot of brands in the past want to talk about how fast their network is, how great their cola tastes. And people don't care about that anymore. None of that matters unless it matters to me. The consumer's power is about two words. It's more and less. More of what matters to me. That's personal. That's not some Coca Zed, Tony the Tiger tastes great. It's what matters to me, my life, my livelihood, the quests I'm on, the things I'm looking for. And I want it with less friction. I want it with less effort. And if you can't give me those two, I want it for a lot less price. Yeah. So the consumer is demands, and the people that respond to them, you know, when an Apple puts 1,000 songs in my pocket, or an Airbnb lets me belong in a local community, an Uber lets me summon my chariot, the people that get it are seeing incredible gains in terms of engagement with audiences and actual monetization of that engagement. The ones that don't, that still think they matter, they're the ones that are important, are really losing out. They're becoming commoditized. And more often than not, prices are only tiebreaker. Their messaging becomes very transactional, tactile. Second thing I'm seeing is we got a new contract with the humanity. We got a new contract with the planet. We've got a new contract with just how we live with all other living creatures in this planet. And that's not marketing buzz anymore. Those are legitimate asks. And because of transparency nowadays, because of the TikToks and the Snapchats and the social media, I can actually, I can open your kimono and look in. And if I don't like what I see, not only will I boycott you with my wallet, I might hit you with a social media slingshot.
Yeah.
And in a nanosecond, take all that brand equity that you've got and valued at billions on your balance sheet and erode it, and sometimes eradicate it. So that's another thing that we're dealing with is, but the last thing I would say to you is that the thing that I would be most concerned with and considering to be most opportunistic is the consolidation of power with the you know, grocery retailers, if you're in packaged goods, with the people that are competing in the platform economy, the Microsofts, the Salesforce.coms, the Googles, the Bookings.com, the people that are compressing, consolidating supply chain, rewriting the rules of capitalism. And I always say in my speeches, I mean, who owns the customer now? The McDonald's has spent billions, if not trillions of dollars building out those golden arches, inventing new products in the marketing, or Uber Eats? Because ultimately it comes down to who has that customer relationship. So lots of change. And if I was in a young person in marketing with all the tools and array I'd have, don't get locked into a craft like producing TV ads. Don't get locked into a channel like retail. Mm-hmm. Really focus on this world of content and traveling like liquid and no dead ends, and finding ways to really impact a person's life and livelihood.
Wow. So speaking of impact, Tony, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the fallout of Pepsi's Kendall Jenner commercial.
You know, that's, again, an organization that it's trying to move at the speed of life, which is tough. Big multinationals are used to, I'm going to have a big campaign for Pepsi Cola and I'm going to put all my money behind it. Wow, it's got to go around the world now because it's got to be efficient. Okay, let's get a celebrity that everybody knows. Okay, language is an issue because of the nuances. Okay, let's really just do it with pictures and great music. I mean, that universal, that silent film with sound. And so they start doing it. Oh, what else is going on? Well, really, people are starting to protest. We're all about the choice of new generation. The new generation is starting to pick up protest cards. So they put it all together. And on paper, it really sounds wonderful. But what they lose with that is, again, the sense of more of what matters to me. And when that came off, it was a very mass-produced ad. It in many ways, people felt it was it didn't do any justice to the social justice of protest. It made it look like that you could diffuse the society's issues by giving someone a Pepsi to drink, and so it completely missed. It was lost in translation. And that's the problem when you're trying to do a one-size-fits-all drift net. How can I get everybody caught in this ad versus where I think the future marketing is fly fishing. What matters to you is very different than matters to me. And that's not just age. It's what I value. It's the things that are happening around me. And if I can take my brain and repurpose it and say, I can help you get to where you want to go, that's where the magic is. But that's fly fishing versus drift net. But I think Pepsi just got caught in trying to be that a global net that caught a lot of consumers.
Now, tell me about, you got into podcasting. I love Chatter That Matters. Tell me about the kind of impetus of that and what this show is all about for our listeners.
You know, first it was just narcissism. I love chasing microphones. I mean, that's the reason I got into doing a lot of media commentary, and I love being in conferences. But I really felt that I wanted to play with the podcast to say, how would I sound? First ones I did with Chatted Matters was just kind of me ranting. Then I said, you know, I really like doing, and I started to host a lot on radio. I started interviewing people, and I really enjoy that because it wasn't just asking, as you know, the questions. It was drawing out those nuggets. And then when the world changed, I said, you know, I really started to feel for small businesses, platform economy, that scale. I'm feeling for the fact that they are the heart. They not only is that their life tied up in that business, but they're also the heart of the Canadian economy, the North American economy. And it's in our collective interest to take their interest personally. So I decided to repurpose the podcast. And really, the story arc is the hero's journey. I make the hero of the story is the small business owner. We learn about their backstory, their dreams, their challenges, the obstacles they're facing, and why they're doing this quest. Why do they leave a good job and do this? Or do they lose a job after they do? We really want to understand where they are. Then I bring in three thought leaders and some of the top thinkers, and they do a deep dive into these stories, and they come in with these gems and really offer advice. And at the end of it, the owner gets a sense to appreciate what I had to say to thank them. And I kind of close it all off with, here's what I learned. So it's a tight little 25 or 30 minute biography and an interception of the quest they're on, and really trying to position these experts as Yodas. I think it's, and I can say this because they're not about me, I think it's must listen for anybody, entrepreneurs, aspiring to be entrepreneurs, but more importantly, as you're going to see, we're going to migrate in the next couple of weeks, anybody that's finding themselves in this gig economy without the benefit of a guaranteed paycheck, a culture, people that they can rely on, that world, which is a world of uncertainty and insecurity and fear, I think anybody in that world is going to get a lot out of the, especially, I think today, but even more so as we migrate away from just small business to the smallest of businesses, which is you.
And tell me about kind of how it started and kind of the support that you're getting right now, and maybe where you're getting pickup from, and you know, where you're at, even advertising it at the moment.
Well, so the interesting thing about Small Business Matters originally, which is my podcast, is Chatter That Matters, but the series Small Business. I originally presented it to a couple of radio stations in CBS, which is it's not the American CBS, but Canadian Broadcast Sales. It represents, you know, Corus and Stingray and Rogers. Love the idea, and they said we can put the highlight reel on 60 radio stations. And then we approached a bunch of sponsors, and I had a pretty good working relationship with RBC. They wanted to do something for small business. It was a great fit. It happened literally from conception of what the small business series would be in my mind, talking to the radio station, getting RBC involved was 2 weeks. And if anybody's been involved in this world, 2 weeks it happens in about 2 seconds. And then we had to get to work and produce one of these every week. And then I started getting more ambitious, and I wanted to put posts out on LinkedIn to support. And then I wanted to put tuck-in videos. So there's videos of Joe Mimram and Jeannie Becker and Joe Jacklin and Vicky Saunders from CEO and Marae Lavery from CEO of EDC. So we put this all together every week. It's a labor of love. It will be although my wife says there'll never be a swan song but it will probably be my swan song that I'll do this for as long as I still have this energy, enthusiasm. But I think it's continually moving away from the need to be even in virtual conferences and much more into this world where I can be positive and inspirational versus very often what I'm hearing in the media is this, and in some cases in conferences, is sort of this negative energy, this sense of impossibility. I want to be on the side of possibility.
Hey, are you having trouble tracking inbound phone calls from your website or ads? CallRail gives you the call tracking you need to measure the success of your marketing efforts in real time. Discover how many calls you receive from your Google ads, organic searches, social media efforts, and so much more. But that's not the only reason we use CallRail. CallRail seamlessly integrates your call and conversion data with over 700 marketing tools and platforms, including Google Analytics and Salesforce, to fuel deeper insights automatically. Start your free trial today with CallRail.
I feel like what John Krasinski did out of his own office, creating some good news, gave hope. You know, I would watch it every week and almost cry during COVID. It gave me kind of that moment of hope every week. I feel like your show is that hope, that lifeline to small businesses across this country.
That's the most wonderful thing you can tell me, because that's really the quest I'm on. I mean, I've been really lucky. I live a pretty modest lifestyle, and I've made enough money that it's going to see me through. So it's not about having to do something or needing to do something, but wanting to do it. And I just want to bring that. We're 38 million people in Canada. We have fresh water for the next 300 years and energy for the next 300 years. We've got values. Sure, there's a lot of warts, but overall, this is an incredible country to live. And I think we could be the epicenter for the new economy. Instead of just inventing stuff here and having it capitalized in the States or other countries, I think our track record of in video gaming with Bombardier used to be Nortel, which is really Huawei, recreational vehicles, all the things that we've done in the past, I think we can recreate in this new economy. People like Sunil Sharma, Techstars, and what we're seeing with Entrepreneur First and CEO with Vicky Saunders. I mean, we're seeing some incredible energy, and that's what I want people to think about. Don't worry about what's in your rearview mirror. Don't even worry about the fact that it looks like the sky's falling. Just stare at that sky. You'll see some incredible silver linings. Put your hand up and people are going to reach for it, because that is what made Canada great, that immigrant resilience mentality. And I think as long as we can bring it into our schools and bring it into the people graduating and the people that have capital, this is going to be one of the greatest runs for Canada we've ever seen.
And how do you find those Padawans, those businesses that are looking for that advice?
You know, it's interesting enough. Karuba Sankar is a guy in RBC that's just only involved in helping people, companies that with diversity, LGBTQ, indigenous. So, and he works with these people saying, I'm going to give you a chance to compete in the big leagues. And he provided me some names. By the way, they don't put any favoritism other than they show them how to compete. I was a fan of CEO, so they supplied a couple of people. Now that I'm doing it, people are coming to me with it. And I'm interested in humility and authenticity. And I'm interested in people that aren't afraid to share their vulnerabilities, as opposed to somebody that's looking for a 30-minute commercial. Because, you know, if you want a commercial, you can turn on anywhere. If you want to realize there's people just like you that are working, you know, 12, 14 hours a day for their life and livelihood of their family, and they can make it happen, that's the people I'm looking for.
It's amazing. So podcasting, you know, almost every day I hear about a new podcast that started and launched, and, you know, it's this trend. But for you, you know, what has it been like as far as the logistics of, like, where do you host it and how do you kind of follow the data and how do you kind of see growth for a show like yours?
It's interesting for me that I'm approaching it like my whole life. You know, when everybody was talking about TV ads, I was in the weeds and store. Kind of approaching podcasts a little differently, that numbers are important. We've got to host it on Libsyn. It's everywhere you get your podcast. It's Chatter That Matters. We're growing our audience. I think globally we're 1,300 of the 1.5 million podcasts in the world. So that puts us in the top 1%. But the numbers aren't what I'm interested in. It's the long tail of the content. So, Chatter That Matters is going to be taught in a Schuller class that I'm doing a llecture for next week. And the 22nd of September, I'm talking to a book club that's really interested in some of these stories of women entrepreneurs. And I can also talk about storytelling and how the two of them work together. Women business organization, women in grocery. A lot of these associations now are saying, hey, can you come in and use your skills in terms of talking to our audience, but let's study these podcasts and use the combination of the two. So, and then the final thing is I have the most incredible partner in RBC, because again, their only ask was don't make the story about them, make it about the small business owners, but they can circulate this to hundreds of thousands of people. And, you know, Davinder Gill in BC, I'm going to put on a session with all their branch managers. So the long tail of this content, I'm going at it very differently, that I want every entrepreneur in Canada, I want every business school teaching entrepreneurs to listen to this content, not because it's about me or that I'm going to get paid any more for it. It's really because I think it matters to them, to the individual, and it matters to the Canadian economy. So that's all I'm focused on. I'm really growing my podcast. I'm not interested in a Joe Rogan play where I'm going to sell this one day to a, one of the platforms. I want to make it out available to anybody and as commercial free as we make it right now.
Yeah. So you've seen the trends over the years from, you know, TV to radio to, you know, out of home. Why are podcasts so popular right now? Why do you think it is?
You know, I think that their stories, and to me, those who know how to tell the stories have always ruled the world. I mean, we waited in villages for the person that managed to find their way over that mountain to find out what was happening on the other side of the mountain, or telling us about this city called Rome with the marble. You know, Chuck Yeager, when he broke the sound barrier and talked about, you know, what it was like. It was a poke through jello. Grandma could be sitting beside me sipping lemonade. Much later, I realized the barriers were never in the sky in our minds. Well, NASA used that story for years to change culture. And I think what podcast does is, instead of trying to tell these stories in snackable 30-second ads or in a piece of a point of sale where you have a second, where you've got to kind of bring everything to life, I think with a good storyteller in podcast, you can really leave the stress of the day. You can get engaged in something. You can be part of somebody else's life. You can get lessons in life. And that's why I think they're popular. And also, I think actually things like earbuds. And again, going back to more and less, that I can listen to the content that matters to me. If I love Australian football, I can have a podcast on it. If I'm involved in Formula One, I can have a podcast on it. So the ability to really go an inch wide and a mile deep, I think, which makes it special. And that's why people got to stop looking at numbers on podcasts and really focus at passion and engagement and how long, you know, the proudest thing I have is that most of my podcasts, it's 100% completion. People stay with me through the whole story. So if I'm holding on to people for 30 minutes, it's because there's something of value for them. And again, I can say it because they're not about me, just my ability to stitch together, like I do on a conference floor, the story between the protagonist and the Yodas that come to the rescue.
Incredible. And for you, Tony, what podcast do you listen to in your free time?
You know, it's interesting. I love what you're doing. I love what I've listened to a number of them, but The Daily I love because I'm a political and historical junkie. Not a big fan of Joe Rogan. Just his intensity. Not Gary Vee. I mean, some of the big ones I find they're very intense. I really like I love when they just take their time a little bit and stretch it out a bit. But I'm also finding that because of my own personal insecurities, I'm better at producing my podcast when I haven't listened to ones that I find are exceptional, because then I'm overthinking every sentence and every piece of music and I lose some of my authenticity. I mean, people that listen to mine know that I'm an amateur. You know, these are from the heart. They're not, I don't have like the 22 people that The Daily puts in their credits producing this stuff. So rather than trying to compete with that, I try to just put out, you know, the Tony Chapman sold lemonade at age 5, hustled radio advertising, putting himself through school and sold, you know, was worried about selling cases of Tide when everybody else was so in the sexy world of producing Tide ads. That's kind of my podcast, a little blue collar.
Wow. So Tony, you and I, we both speak at events, we've been at conferences, you've got an agent, and we've been at these events. What do you think is the answer and the solution to getting more BIPOC representation at these events that we speak at?
There's two things. One, people have got to remove some of their biases and what is the, you know, and realize that diversity is an incredibly important part of us learning our curiosity and our ability. So second thing is, though, and this might challenge a bit of your question. I'm a belief that all lives matter.
Yeah.
And I think that I wouldn't want to get a gig for any other reason because I'm the best at delivering it. So I would say to the people that are coming up saying, we'll do our part to open people's minds that to listen generously what the message you have to offer, but never get on that stage because you happen to fit a paint by numbers. Get on that stage because you're going to make eyes shine and hearts beat, and you're going to get a standing ovation. You're going to tell the stories of where you came from, but more importantly, why do they matter to the audience in context to where they come from? And when you start bringing those two together, that's what the fusion of culture is all about. And I think that's going to be the key. So we'll do our part, you do your part, and you'll see that it is going to be a poke through jello, and the barriers were never in the sky, but all in our collective minds.
So who gave you your first speaking opportunity?
That's how I built my agency, because I came up from a when I came up to Toronto from Montreal, I didn't have a network. I didn't go to UCC. I didn't go to Western or Ivy. So I started having to really think about how am I going to stand out? A lot of it was writing, thought leadership. I never talked about the agency. I talked about what I think matters and how, you know, what does it take to engage an audience? And next thing you know, people say, well, I like what you have to say. And I went into the boardrooms and said, you just come and present to our senior management team. And I started with sort of 10 people. And next thing you know, it was, as you know, on a panel or moderating a panel, starting doing keynotes. I remember my first keynote was, I still shiver how bad it was, but you know, you get up there and you put yourself out. And then over time, I realized that this was the perfect channel, because if I could talk about the future and talk about how commerce is going to happen in the future and why the heart of your brand matters much more than the ingredients of it, then people are going to say, well, I love what he has to say, and my agency's not telling me that. Maybe we should bring him in for a brief. And so that's how it started. When I left the agency world, I signed up with the National Speakers Bureau. They were an incredible bureau to present me as a, talk about storytelling, which was in vogue. Not so much on the host side, because that was new, again, a square peg in a round hole. But I just started doing it, and then I just became, you know, I'm a good packager of my content. I started putting it out there and started showing little clips of it. And one thing led to another. And again, I feel for the speakers, especially today, that are doing it because they have to do it, because they depend on that income, versus the freedom I had that I wanted to do it. And I could be really selective at the kind of content and audiences that I knew I would add real value and relevance to. And when you do that, I think it just, the word of mouth travels, and somebody say, I heard you at the real estate conference, and so on and so on.
So if you could go back and back in time, you know, the DeLorean shows up, you jump in it, you go back in time to when you're 5 years into running your agency, what advice would you give 5 years into the agency, Tony?
Hire people that are different than you. Understand your strengths and embrace it, and hire people that have the strengths and where you're weak. So that's the first thing I would tell myself, is I tried to surround myself with too many Tony Chapmans and not enough people that would stand up and oppose me. Yeah. Okay. Let me start that again just to make it easier.
Yeah.
That's a great question. And what the first thing I would do is I talk to Tony Chapman about talent. Don't hire people that are in your own image. Hire people that really have strengths and where you're weak, so they can focus on what they do really well and frees you up to focus on what you do really well. And in some cases, I did that exceptionally well with people like my first employee was a chartered private accountant. And other times I made some mistakes. Second thing is always stay humble. You know, we had a lot of early success, and I really started drinking my own Kool-Aid. And it was only when the company I sold to went bankrupt and I had to reinvent myself sitting in the reception desk of an art studio that I realized I'm not the one that's important in this story. It's the people that work for you. It's the clients that depend on you. And I think I would have liked to see more of the humility I think I got later in life in a younger Tony Chapman. And the third thing is work-life balance. When I was the first 10 years of my agency, all I did was work. It's when I started my new agency, when I had young daughters, that I kept it to under 20 people. So for 10 years, I could walk them to school and be their dad. So I didn't know that in the first 5 years. I kind of learned that midstream, and I think that's, you know, it's just, again, life lessons you get along your way.
And walking your daughters to school, is it worth it?
Oh, the best thing. I tell you, my best friends are my daughters. They're the most lovely. One works for Accenture in London, England. One works for Apple in San Francisco. So I don't see them a lot, but when I see them or even talk to them virtually, we have a great relationship. They're the proudest things I've ever done. And proudest moments has been as a dad. And I would say to people, invest in your children. If you listen to my podcast, interesting enough, time and time again, the entrepreneur that's succeeding is because I used to go to work with my mom or dad. Huh. You know, the one this week is, you know, I watched my dad do three jobs. I was a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
Did you ever resent it? No, I learned so many incredible lessons in life. I'm so proud of my dad. So be the parent that says, you know, not everything happens on Facebook or TikTok. It really happens through personal experiences.
It's incredible. And all your years of experience working with Pepsi and Dove, et cetera, all the brands that are listening right now who have maybe 1, 2 to 5 agency relationships, What's your advice to brands to have a great agency brand relationship? What would you say to them if you could?
We've lost trust, and brands have lost trust with retailers, and the whole supply chain has lost trust in each other. So every link is trying to be a fortress. And I think the beauty of great relationships, I think in my days with Unilever and Pepsi and Kraft, when we built Kraft Hockeyville, we trusted each other. We cared about each other. We hung out together. You know, it wasn't worried about the shoe's going to drop the next day and you're going to lose that account, or we're not going to pay you for 160 days, even though you're paying your employees every week. We built it on trust and goodwill. And until that comes back, I think it's one of the most toxic environments. I feel so sorry for the people who just love to create, make magic, bring those buyers and sellers together like I used to do on radio, yet they're doing it in a climate which is really about me versus we.
Okay, that's great. And those that are selling radio right now and you know, selling newsprint ads, what's your advice to the kind of sellers of kind of content pieces or kind of like real estate online or in radio?
You know, the world's changed and it's really tough to be in media that's not about immediate transactions.
Yes.
So when I'm looking at radio and I'm looking at television, what I would be doing is going to every brand and saying, you need to also show at the top of your funnel empathy. You got to show about how you care about humanity and the planet. You're not going to do that with a mobile ad. You're not going to do that. You're going to do that through long form content like podcasts. You're going to do it through television and radio. And if I was in those mediums, all I would be focusing on is showing the heart of the brand versus, am I the best one to sell cars? Because sadly, you're not any longer. You're the best to sell the car brand. You're best to sell why Volvo essence is safety. But in terms of that deal of the week, that world has left you by. Wow. That world has passed you by.
Yeah. Oh, man. Tony, favorite apps that you can't live without day to day?
I love apps that help me get to where I want to go. I'm a huge fan of Waze because when I'm driving, it takes away all the stress and really improves my odds of getting to places. Yeah. I'm a big fan of booking.com because we love to do spontaneous road trips. So at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we know how far we've gotten. We know where we got to go. And we're often traveling with dogs. So the filters make it really easy. Obviously the Spotify's of the world that puts millions of songs in my pocket, the Netflix that put content, anybody that helps me get to where I'm needing to go and gives me more of what matters, less friction, I'm a fan of. The apps that just are there because they feel they've solved a problem I don't have. Sometimes I download them, very rarely I use them, and more often than not, once every couple of months, I delete them.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Tony, it's been such a joy and pleasure to have you on the show. Where can people find you? Where can they go to discover your show?
The best way to just download Chatter That Matters wherever you get your podcasts, or if you want to just go to a website, chatterthatmatters.ca. And brother, I'm a big fan of what you're doing and telling these stories and just celebrating and made in Canada creativity. Like this is, stop importing this stuff from all over the world that you'll get you into trouble because it's just mass and crass, and get into what's happening in every pond in Canada, every corner, which is the magic of being Canadian and everything we stand for, and make your creative happen around that. And maybe we'll get back to that win-win relationship between the brands and the Canadian consumers they want to do business with.
It's awesome. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you. Thank you, man.
Thanks everyone for joining us this week on Marketing Jam, and we'll see you next week on The Jam.
Thanks for listening to Marketing Jam. If you enjoyed the show, head over to our YouTube or Facebook and give us a thumbs up, and visit iTunes to leave a rating and review. Thanks again, and see you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.